You're listening to the Just Giants podcast with Grump and the Cranky Fan.
Be sure to listen for free on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, and Podbean.
Welcome back to Just Giants with Grump and the Cranky Fan, the best damn podcast for the best damn football team. I'm your host, the Football Grump. With me, as always, is Mike the Cranky Fan, and we are back a day late, but not a dollar short. Cranky had some important business going on in front of the TV with basketball on it.
Brutal, man. Road trip was down in St. Pete this weekend to see my Rays sweep the Mets. So for all you Met fans out there, tough. But then I had to go, to Atlanta for a quick, business conference Monday and Tuesday. So I had to give up my game one tickets. And, you know, it's bad enough that you have to watch a game like that on TV, but when you're watching it with kind of coworkers and industry peers and people that are not clearly on the same wavelength as you, and you have to be somewhat professional, it's tough. So I basically had an entire bar rooting for the Knicks because I was rooting for them. They're going to kill me. The mental exhaustion I'm going to have following this team. It's been a lot of fun. And I think us as Knicks fans, and, you know, we can extrapolate that out to being Giant fans too, is when you're in moments like this, live it up and enjoy it. Don't worry about the next round. Don't worry about history. Don't worry about, this is fun. I mean, more grays you can see here, but this is why you're a fan. And you live for high pressure, big moment games with potential for greatness. So I kind of like to remind myself and remind everybody, like, whether it's the Knicks or, you know, the Giants, like, after you beat Minnesota and get ready to play Philly, don't worry about, you know, Super Bowls and stuff. Just enjoy the moment, because I am certainly enjoying this moment right now.
Yeah, I mean, if you're always going to take the pessimistic approach of, well, we're not winning the Super Bowl this year, you're not, I don't understand why you watch sports. I mean, I look back at that 2022 year, and the thing that doesn't stick out to me is a trip into the city, which, you know, I think it was a Sunday night, maybe it was a Saturday night, but that Eagles game, we went into the city, the Talking Giants had a watch party. And, like, that's a decent travel night just to watch a game I could have watched on TV. I don't remember going there and sitting through a terrible loss for Philly. I remember going the week before and being in a giant crowd of chanting people while we beat the Vikings. That's the part, sure, I remember. So if you can't live up the moment, then I don't know what you get out of sports ever.
Well, even living in the moment, like, as it's happening, like right now the Knicks are up 1-0 in second round Eastern Conference playoffs. Don't get too wrapped up into, well, if we play Boston, this is going to happen, or, you know, worrying so much about history stuff. Just enjoy right now.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what's funny is in the 2011 Giants year, I was down on that team the moment they dropped the ball to Washington late in the season. Was our family Christmas party. They're always good for a stinker on that day, and for whatever reason, they were the better team by miles than Washington. And they were, like, Hakeem Nicks dropped a wide open touchdown. I want to say if it wasn't the first play of the game, it was like the first series where he was 40 yards downfield, and the nearest corner was like on his face or something, 20 yards behind him, and he just dropped it. And I was just like, you know what? This team has some potential. This Victor Cruz kid is the real deal. I don't think this is the year. And that's kind of how I felt from that moment on. You know, I kind of peaked up a little bit for the all-in game against Dallas week 18, or I guess it was week 17 back then. Mm-hmm. You know, that was certainly special. But again, didn't that come down to like a blocked kick? No, that was the week before or whatever. It was the blocked kick in order for them to keep going. Like, it was just like, just by slivers of margins. And I was like, there's no way they're beating the Saints in the playoffs. They're not beating Drew Brees. We're going to have to play in New Orleans. It's never happened. They're not doing that. I got all caught up in that shit. New Orleans didn't even beat San Francisco. Right. And I knew once that happened, I was like, this can happen. We lost to San Francisco earlier this year, but we should have won that damn game, and we barely lost. So, I mean, I missed out a little bit. Like, I enjoyed the Falcons game. That's, like, one of the my favorite games I've ever been to, you and I.
Right.
But I was always worried about, like, in-between weeks. And
yeah,
it's no way to watch sports.
To me, I say this on this show a lot. I say it at work a lot. I say it to the cranky wife a lot. What's past is prologue. You know, kind of crappy regular season. You know, you finish the season on a down note. You know, you lost 3 out of 4 if you're like basketball or football or hockey or something. It's like, I don't care. Playoffs start tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to enjoy this to the fullest. Like tomorrow night, you know, game two, me and Snacks will be at the Garden together, which is a whole nother subplot. We're 6-0 to go watching games together at the Garden. So hopefully the basketball gods remember that. But we're going to be like, we're not going to worry that Mitchell Robinson's out for the playoffs. We're not going to worry about guys not playing. We're not going to worry about it's been 52 years. None of that stuff. We're just going to soak in, you know, the best atmosphere in sports, Madison Square Garden, when it's electric for a big event, and just live in a moment. And when it's finally over, whether we're knocked out by Indy or Boston or Denver or whoever it is, I'll worry about that later. But right now, I'm a 9-year-old kid as excited as I've ever been in my life about something.
And I think, honestly, that's the best way to watch sports.
Because yeah.
at the heart of it, you're watching other people play a game.
Yeah.
Right.
You know who else was watching a game the other day and got a lot of abuse when the Knicks were still playing Philly, and one Saquon Barkley was on the at courtside,
and they won that game too, didn't they? The Sixers.
Yeah, but I thought it was really interesting. I thought it was really interesting the New York fan reaction to Saquon Barkley, and actually Barkley's response back to it. I wanted to kind of talk about at the beginning of the show before we get into, you know, real X's and O's and player movements and stuff. And wanted to know what you thought, because I really was kind of I was a little surprised by the New York fan reaction to seeing Barkley and, you know, in his new employer.
What was that reaction generally?
A lot of vitriol, a lot of anger to Barkley, you know. You're a traitor. You know, how could you do this to us? And he actually clapped back. He's like, you guys should get over it by now. I mean, you know, I gave good years. They didn't make an offer for me. And he's absolutely right. I mean, this fan base was, you know, Saquon Barkley was the quote unquote face of this franchise for a while. You know, a generation of Giant fans, that was your guy. And he didn't do anything wrong, and nothing that none of you people wouldn't have done either. You know, he was not offered, they tried to negotiate, it didn't happen. He was not offered a contract when he became a free agent, and he took an offer. There's no more loyalty when, you know, it's not two-sided anymore. And it sucks. Unfortunately, he's with Philly, but, you know, what is he supposed to do? Now that he's in Philly, you know, of course, the city of Philadelphia has this inferiority complex with New York, always has, always will be. You knew they're going to trot him out for a high-profile Philadelphia sporting event. It's, of course, it's against New York. So he is unfortunately a pawn in their games and stuff. But as a Giant fan, I don't understand that hate you're going to give to a guy that you love because he's with Philly. And it's not like his hand was not forced to go there. And I think he deserves a little bit more respect than that. Just be like, move on. And I think he's completely right.
Well, there's a couple things here. I feel nothing about Saquon Barkley being at a Sixers game and cheering on this and just embracing a Philadelphia. It's what players do when they get deals in new cities. You know, Brian Daboll and Joe Shane sat courtside for Knicks games and were in Rangers playoffs, and everyone clapped their hands and were excited about it. I didn't really see the Giant fan reaction because I wasn't really like on Twitter at that time. I saw some little things here and there, but here's what I think is funny. Saquon Barkley, as a member of the New York Giants and a Twitter user, barely used his account in his time as a New York Giant. in terms of posting, but I think it's very funny that he thinks New York fans can't get over, which I saw the tweet, you know, just like, get over it by now. Can't get over something that happened like a month and a half ago, 2 months ago.
Yeah.
This man reads everything about him, and yes, he takes it to heart. So if anyone here needs to get over, and it's just very funny to me that he's like faking this high road message. But like, you know, I don't know if you know this, but there's like the meme of it's like the hand-drawn shitty memes. And it's like the smiling face emoji, but it's a paper mask over a guy who's incredibly angry. That is 100% what that tweet was. He is just as mad. You know what I mean? Like, he is the same guy flipped over on the other side of the argument, pretending to be happy and laughing about it. So I think that's a little bit funny. But he didn't do anything wrong in terms of he's a player on the open market. And, of course, the Eagles, the biggest trying to cuck the Giants organization out there, they're going to offer him far more than he's actually worth and far more than anyone else was probably going to offer him.
Sure.
And it would be malpractice on his own part for the future of his family and children to not consider an offer like that very seriously. I know that he has already been a very high paid running back, and he has endorsement deals, and he's going to keep getting endorsement deals, and he's got plenty of money, but that doesn't mean that he doesn't deserve all the money that he can get while he is still physically able to perform the only job he has ever trained for.
And let's put it in perspective, all the endorsement deals. I mean, Saquon Barkley has some deals, but Saquon Barkley is not Peyton Manning. You know, he's not ubiquitous with, you know, he hasn't transcended football fans as far as being a personality.
Let me put it this way. Marshawn Lynch probably has more endorsement opportunities than Saquon Barkley does.
Absolutely. He is trying to transcend it from football to pop culture at this point. Yes. So to be like, you know, if he is not a superly rich person because of his endorsement deals. I mean, he is not, you know, he's not a LeBron James is a billionaire because of parlaying endorsements into investments into other things, where Saquon Barkley, most of his money he's made in his career is going to be on football, most likely.
Saquon Barkley is a rich man. LeBron James is a wealthy man.
Yes.
They're very different things.
Exactly.
The other thing, you know, it's not like he wasn't offered something from the Giants. To be in the corner of New York fans for a moment here, he was offered things here. And, you know, for a lot of people, it's easy to take the side of the player, and in any situation where you're quibbling over something like $2 million. $2 million to an organization and a team owner is trivial, but it is not trivial to the individual player that's on the other side of it. And that's really kind of...
It's also not trivial to the salary cap, too.
Well,
I mean...
True.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, really what this comes down to me, and the Saquon negotiations always did come down to me, was a player who has unfortunately not entitled to the guaranteed money that he seeks. He's not entitled to it because he hasn't earned it with things that are outside of his control, and that's injuries. It's not his fault, but the fact remains it would be irresponsible for a GM to give him guaranteed money, especially a GM of a team that isn't good, that has other problems, and honestly needs to put that money in multiple places. It's nobody's fault that it's the way it is, but it's not as if Saquon was offered nothing. There was a sticking point, and he refused to move on, and that's fine with me. But the to take the position that the Giants did nothing or cared not at all is silly, especially since they reached out to Barkley before Daniel Jones. That fact cannot be written out of history. I know it's not necessarily best practice for Barkley to take that offer midseason and whatever, but the fact remains that the Giants did prioritize Saquon Barkley. So New York fans have a bone to pick in that he could have chosen to be a team-friendly guy, but even though he's not entitled to that, he didn't have to go to Philadelphia. And I think that's where a lot of Giants fans stick. Me personally, I'm not shocked at all that Philly was the one who came calling And ultimately, at this point in Saquon's career, I don't care that he's gone with the Giants. It really sucks that he's in the division. The fact that it's Philly and not Washington or Dallas, I don't actually care.
No.
Personally.
Yeah, I again, you pay big contracts based on expected future value, not on lifetime achievement awards. And the Giants, the points you made just a little while ago, are in no position to be paying lifetime achievement awards. We've been scraping up against the cap for a couple of years now. I mean, the biggest problem that this front office inherited and is still working through is cleaning up the mess of previous administrations with poor management of money. And we are finally getting to a point where, you know, due to roster management cleanup and the increase in the cap going forward, that we no longer have to be like, what do we have to do to get rid of guys to get under control? But we can start going out of the Kmart basement bargain bin and start shopping at Nordstrom's. So if you want all of these things to happen, you know, the way to build an organization, drafting for the future, augmenting it with free agents that will help you in the now, you have to get your house in order. And Saquon Barkley, as much as, you know, a segment of the population of that certain age that has not had experienced success thinks that that's their guy, you know, just look at him. Grump, I mean, if we were to bet each other how many games Saquon Barkley's going to play for Philly this year, are either of us putting money on 16 or 15 or 17 or 16? I'm not.
No. I'm sure it'll be more. I'm sure it'll be less likely that he'll be injured behind the Eagles offensive line than the Giants. But yeah, I mean, he's due for a couple of games every year.
Sure. And you know, it's,
I mean, lest we forget, the time he got injured against Dallas was after the play was over. He was like walking backwards and stepped weird on somebody's heel and then didn't play for like 4 weeks or some shit like that.
Some people are more brittle than others. Some people have bad luck. Some people have a combination of both. And it doesn't matter that they play on grass in Philly as opposed to the turf at MetLife. Doesn't matter that there's a better offensive line. Doesn't matter that he may not have to be, you know, the brunt of the running game for that. Doesn't matter any of that stuff. It's just some people live under a black cloud. And unfortunately, he can't get away from that black cloud. So, you know, all of these things say, yeah, it sucks he's in the division. It sucks against a division rival. It sucks it he's wearing the enemy's colors. But the Giants have bigger things to worry about with themselves and other things in this division and in this conference than where Saquon Barkley ended up.
Yeah, so that's kind of what we're going to talk about here. I know it says NFC East review, but I meant to say NFC East draft review. But then I thought about it and I was like, not really, because like some of this is going to be, it's all in the context of the rest of the offseason, right? So like you said with Saquon Barkley, the Eagles draft plan involves them having Saquon Barkley on the roster. So the Eagles are actually a really interesting organization. I think it's a good one to start with because they're probably the class of the NFC East right now anyway. But nevertheless, you know, I'm really, in preparing for this episode, I really got into thinking about, I want to look at Howie Roseman's like draft record going all the way back and just see if he's continued to operate this way and how it panned out for him. Because it's really interesting because it's not like, I wouldn't call this a bad draft. You know what I mean? Like Kenyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean, you know, the Eagles secondary last year was probably its biggest bugaboo. And Quinion Mitchell, you know, was the clear best player in the Senior Bowl. A corner from Toledo, you know, you might maybe expect him to struggle in his first year with like the nuances and whatever. That happens anyway with corner, but this is a really good player. Cooper DeJean, I think, is going to be a plug and play safety. He's going to be very, very good. And that will help transform that secondary and that defense. But the rest of the draft, to me, the only thing that's impressive is how he managed to move down constantly to continue to have ammunition for future years. I mean, the amount of trade downs are pretty ridiculous. And then all the players he selected, it's kind of, I want to see how this turns out because they're all kind of just like, media lovables You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And for different reasons. Some of them are names. Some of them came from a big school. And some of them are like the freak athlete. Like,
it's an extension. It's an extension of the, we always say how they're trolling the Giants is like, they like to own the back page when it comes to NFL transactions.
Well, it's like, know? I mean, like any stretch of like, these are all media lovables. So of course the media gives them love when this is how the draft goes out. And I was watching a thing where Nick Wright said something along these lines as well. I don't really follow Nick Wright, so I don't know what the hell he was talking about. I didn't watch all of it, but I think that he might be onto something, because like Jalex Hunt to me was a total mess. That was a guy who was going to like play all over the defense. He doesn't have a fucking position. And they took him. Will Shipley, who's been the running back at Clemson for like the last 3 years, everyone's been raving about Will Shipley.
It feels like he's been around for 12, to be very honest.
Aeneas Smith, who was someone that I actually thought declared last year, so I had done draft work on him last year. He was the shifty guy from Texas A&M. Jeremiah Trotter, I mean, a name right there. Johnny Wilson, a name. Like, I'm really curious, like, The media loves, I hate saying the media, like it's like some big conspiracy, but like all of these players are guys that were heavily favored among outlets for one reason
or
another. Well,
they also have high Q scores. Like everybody knows all, like Johnny Wilson. I mean, obviously I know who he is, but it's like, oh, they got that guy. So it's not a lot of looking through your draft book and being like, well, who's this guy or something. It's like, no. You know,
yeah,
oh,
exactly.
Him. So
everybody knows who all of these players are.
And just because you're familiar with them, you kind of have this sense of, oh,
yeah,
they,
oh, they
must
got that.
Be good.
But it's coupled with that, oh, they got that guy in that round because they kept trading down. So it has this double effect of a great draft. And I'm curious to see if these guys, because like Johnny Wilson stinks. I can't see an NFL path for Johnny Wilson. Aeneas Smith is another one that I was just thoroughly unimpressed with.
Let me talk about Johnny Wilson, because I actually have seen him play twice in person. So Johnny Wilson is a guy that just is a physical mismatch when he's playing against, you know, a lower tier conference, what the ACC is. And the Florida State offense for the last 2 years, you know, they brought in a bunch of hired guns from, I think Johnny Wilson, I believe, was from Arizona State before he went to Florida State. You know, everybody was brought in. They're all like 23, 24 years old, an old thing. And all they would do is have a quarterback who just ran around and scrambled and is faster than offensive lineman or defensive lineman, throwing the ball up for grabs for a guy that is physically superior. That's it. It's not a talent thing. It's just they were the kings of the broken play. And he was the receiver who was the king of catching broken plays. You don't see great, you know, great routes. You don't even see great hands. You just see a guy that just kind of went.
Is gigantic.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, and so, but nevertheless, I mean, I'm not going to lie. They had a hell of an offseason, and they did a lot of work contractually with extending players that they already like to clear room to get guys like Bryce Huff, which is going to be a huge addition to that pass rush. Which they lost Hassan Reddick. They lost Fletcher Cox. That's a huge body in the middle, a veteran presence. I know that they've been rebuilding the trenches year after year. They also lost Jason Kelsey. So now Cam Jurgens is the center. You know what I mean? Bryce Huff has to be that pass rusher on the edge that they hired him to be. Jordan Davis, the gigantic tackle. Jalen Carter. Those guys must step up in Fletcher Cox's absence. The end.
Do they feel a little bit like they're trying to mirror what the Patriots did in the last like 10 years of the Brady Belichick time, where, you know, they did a lot of trading down on draft day,
well,
either to defer picks?
Well, because I'll say no because, well,
let me finish.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just kind of like, keeping their options open for more things, and also cutting bait with guys that are names that maybe you have a year or two or 3 years left of real good production, but just want to cut bait to keep their options open for sustaining what they have.
You know, in some respects, kind of, but here's where Howie Roseman's a little bit different. By always trading down, he always has ammunition to trade up, and the Patriots never really did that. So, like, he gets Jalen Carter because he does this. He gets, you know, Cooper DeJean, Kenyon Mitchell. Like, these are guys that he's able to get. So, like, he nails round one and round two. You know what I mean? Because he has the ammo to move all the hell over the place to do whatever he wants. And then he just trades down the rest of the way and gathers names. And I'm really just curious to see if that was always his strategy, because I just never paid that much attention. And I want to see if that actually worked out. Did gathering names really help him? Because I feel like that doesn't work.
I feel like it's like playing the media game almost. Like, if you do things likes, it kind of takes a little bit of the heat off of you, you know? And it's almost like he's banking favor for a future time when, you know, instead of being, you know, division winners and everything, that they're all of a sudden maybe they're 9-8 or 8-9 one year, but he's banking this kind of favor because he's doing what they like.
Oh, could be. It's almost like that.
I don't think that's like his number one plan for this stuff, but I don't think it also hurts, you know?
Sure. Here's my current working theory, working on the theory that he always does this, right? It's that I think he might be a little bit of a hothead. He fired Doug Peterson. You know, we didn't like him, but it is odd how quickly he was fired after winning a Super Bowl. Nick Sirianni goes in there. Last year's Eagles are an incredible team that for one reason or another fell apart down the stretch. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it, honest to God, looked like the entire coaching staff was going to get fired because of it. Like, Nick Sirianni looked incredibly uncomfortable. Like, I don't know. It really felt like he was going to axe the entire goddamn staff. And he nearly did. I mean, defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator, gone. Mm-hmm. Sean Desai, Matt Patricia, Brian Johnson, gone. Kellen Moore, Vic Fangio, they're here now. I mean, like...
And here's a little sub-story to that that may not be a big deal, but maybe it is like Brian Johnson was a an assistant at Florida, and Harry Roseman went to Florida.
Mm.
So it's interesting, like, there's no loyalty at all for, like, oh, well, he went to, you know, my school or something.
I don't think it's loyalty. I think it's just when he's ready to cut. That's what I mean. Like, right? I think he really is just a hothead, but, like, demands immediate results. Mm-hmm. And so I find this very interesting.
Be good or be gone. Yeah.
I find this very interesting because, you know, I do think that Jalen Hurts has a lot of limitations. I'm not even going to remotely say anything about what Jalen Hurts would be like on the Giants. I'm not comparing him to Daniel Jones. That's not this conversation. I'm saying I grew
That's
up
apples
in an,
and oranges anyway.
Yeah, I grew up in an era of very, very, very good quarterbacks. So my bar is high, and I'm keeping that bar that high even though most of those guys are all those guys are gone now. I guess Matt Stafford is the last one almost kind of part of that era. He's not that bar. He isn't. And with a guy who is so ready to just swing the axe, you know, I wonder, like, if the Eagles start of the year, because they're missing some interior O-line pieces, or they're counting on some rookies, and Jalen Hurts is getting clobbered in the backfield. If he sucks for, you know, the first five games of the year for one reason or another, following the way the last year ended, like, how does that sit? Like, I really am now invested in this working theory I have, is that Howie Roseman is just demands results at all times.
Is that necessarily a bad thing, though?
I'm not even saying that. I'm just curious because, yeah, I think it can be a bad thing when you swing the axe at certain things. Like, we've mm-hmm. talked at length about what it takes for a quarterback to develop and things like that. So I think that in some sense, you got to let him cook, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at his contract right now, and, you know, he's locked up.
Yeah, he's locked up for a while. That's why I mean that.
2028 season is basically the end of it, where, you know, the cap hits are, you know, this year is $13 million, next year 21, then 31, 41.
But there's other methods, man. I mean, who's to say he wouldn't trade him away?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen superstars, and, you know, we may disagree a little bit on how good he really is and what his value is and something, but I think he's...
I don't think we disagree. I just... I mean, you don't think he's Drew Brees, right?
I also think he's, I would consider him a superstar in this league at this point.
Sure, I do too.
Right, but we've seen I other do wonder superstars what he get looks, traded.
Yeah, that's true too. But yeah. I mean, I also, he was considered a superstar on a very, very, very good team. And as these pieces get older, maybe aren't replaced adequately, you know, I don't know. Because I'm not really sure that Cam Jurgens is ready to be Jason Kelce.
He's not a superstar, like, again, little apples and oranges, but Tom Brady went to a different organization, a very average team, and elevated them to a Super Bowl champ.
Correct.
Jalen Hurts is not going from Philly to the Giants, or let's say like a fringy playoff team, and making that team a Super Bowl contender. And I think that's the difference where a guy like him is as close to someone like, you know,
like Brady would. Yeah.
Yeah, or even pick like an elite quarterback now. Just or
even Matt Stafford did.
Yeah, you're right. Because I think Jalen Hurts is, you know, his superstarness is also the sum of other factors and parts around him, where it's not just plug and play this guy and all of a sudden everything else gets elevated.
Well, I mean, I think that we're going to see, I think, starting this year without Jason Kelce. I think that's going to be a big thing. I still think, regardless of all that, this is an incredible coaching staff. Kellen Moore got a lot out of Dak Prescott, which you know I don't think very highly of him. But I always thought highly of Kellen Moore and what he was able to do with Dak Prescott. Vic Fangio is Vic Fangio, man. I mean, I don't even need to say anything about that.
Yeah.
And they addressed the secondary. I think Philly's going to be really good this year. The biggest questions for me is, you know, with the interior of both lines, oddly enough. Like, will Cam Jurgens and Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter step up the way that they were supposed to? Because if they don't, the center of both their offense and defense is in trouble.
Mm-hmm. And Jalen Hurts, you know, again, we call it the sum of the parts. You know, if that offensive line isn't producing and he has to run around and do stuff, that makes his life incredibly hard. And I'm not sure exactly how great he is at doing that on a consistent basis.
Right. And, you know, there are other things to consider here with, like, the tackles. You know, right tackle Lane Johnson is not going to be in the league too much longer. So they better hope that Cam Jurgens works out, because they have to do the exact same replacement method on the right-hand side of their line pretty soon. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm very interested in the Eagles 3 years in the future and 3 years in the past, all cumulatively, like the last six years total. I'm really interested to see how it all plays out. But to me, no question, I think the Eagles are in the best situation to win the division this year still.
Clearly. You have Washington's another new quarterback. We are
let's
to figure out. And then we have Dallas, which we talk about next.
Yeah, exactly. And Dallas, this is another interesting one because, well, the other one, the whole NFC East is very interesting because of some coaching shenanigans and move arounds. And how interesting is it that the Giants, who had like nearly a fist fight over a coaching change, are like the least interesting of all? So I honestly think that Dallas is in a really bizarre spot here. With Dan Quinn leaving, I honest to God think that Dan Quinn did more for that Dallas team and their success than Mike McCarthy did. I think that that defense being so ridiculously good gave...
And so ridiculously quick, so ridiculously fast. Because again, I'm going to go back to October of 2020, right? I was in Dallas for 11 days for the World Series. So I heard a lot of local sports radio, you know, all the Dallas media and everything. And they were saying how this was the worst defense in Dallas Cowboy history. You know, potentially one of the worst ever. You know, the hyperbole was getting there. But that was 2020. And then in less than 3 years, it became, you know, the defense that it was now. So it was, you know,
would you say it was the second best in the NFC behind San Francisco? Probably.
Sure. Absolutely. You know, bordering how good San Francisco's was also.
Sure. And I think that a defense that was that good and that had that many turnovers, it really made Mike McCarthy's offense so much easier. It afforded more mistakes, even though there weren't that many made. And, you know, quite frankly, it just playing with a lead, I don't know. It just, it helps so much.
That's the type
so
of offense that plays better with a lead. You know, do you trust Dak Prescott if you're down 10 points as much as you do running like more of a ball controlled offense.
Yeah, which, and by once the you're up two scores, you really can just ball control. Now, that being said, I love Mike Zimmer. They brought in Mike Zimmer to run the defense, and one of the best, like, coaching staffs I think I saw was the Cincinnati Bengals when Jay Gruden was the offensive coordinator and Mike Zimmer was the defensive coordinator. That right there, those are two guys who are outstanding at what they do. Now, Mike Zimmer is a head coach. Jay Gruden is a head coach. Could be that that's not the best, right? But when it came to drawing up plays and stopping offenses, those two guys were excellent. And Mike Zimmer is very, very, very good at controlling wild-ass personalities because Lord knows they have them in Cincinnati. I'm pretty sure he coached Pac-Man Jones.
And it feels like it's been like that for 40 years. I mean, ever since those guys were getting coked up the night before Super Bowls way back in the 80s. It always seems to be the place where you check the police blotter and it's like, oh, let's go to Cincinnati first. So that's the culture of Cincinnati for the longest time. And you're right. Sometimes you need a warden to kind of take care of the inmates.
So the Cowboys had the exact opposite kind of approach to the offseason that I think Philly did. And there's not a whole lot of movement. They did some necessary stuff. Like bringing in Ezekiel Elliott is probably the biggest splash move here. But getting Eric Kendricks was super important. Re-signing Jordan Lewis, I think, is a really important thing because I think he's a very talented nickel corner. And I think, again, Mike Zimmer tends to get really good stuff out of his secondary pieces.
If Ezekiel Elliott's name is Dave Jones, what do you think of that signing? I mean,
it's not like they spent a lot of money on him. He's a three down back by any stretch. You know, he doesn't really have the same breakaway ability, but he can block, man. I mean, that is a guy you are sure will be where he's supposed to be blocking for somebody. He can break tackles still. I mean, like, for what they paid him, it's fine. The fact that
Do you think that feels like an issue of bringing a guy like that back for a second term where he was one of the faces of that franchise?
Myself. I wonder.
And now he's coming back and it's like, look, your role is not the same as it was before. But, you know, you're going to see thousands of 21 jerseys in the stands. And whenever they say his name, they're going to go nuts and everything. But
they're going to do the stupid spoon thing.
Exactly. Which, yeah, that's not very fresh anymore. But it's hard for these guys. And I don't blame him, but that's just kind of human nature. It's like you're not who you were. And it takes a special cat to be able to handle that. And that's going to be interesting to see.
But you know what? I think that he probably is past that now. I think that moment for him was actually getting cut by the Cowboys. Like,
but he's back in this situation. I mean,
I understand, I think that was his coming to terms moment with, you know what? You're still a kid mentally and as a human being, but as a football player, you're not a kid anymore.
I would buy into that a little more if you're going somewhere fresh, like all of a sudden, let's say the Giants got him or something, you know, somewhere it's like, okay, this is my last shot, you know, and I can mentally, you know, recalibrate what my expectations for me and what expectations others have on me. Going back to Dallas, and again, this is a place where he's probably going to be in the Hall of Fame. You know, he's beloved there. There's, you know, again, they think of Ezekiel Elliott, they're going to think of 2017 Ezekiel Elliott, but that's not him, and he's not going to have that role. Is it extra more difficult to kind of be what you are now as opposed to what you think you were back then?
Well, I think it is. Yeah, I think especially if you go back to that environment. Yeah, I think that makes
especially,
it hard.
Especially where Dallas is not playing in Jacksonville, where, you know, if you go 20 miles outside the city, no one cares. This is – you know,
oh, dude, you drive to Arkansas, they care. You can drive to North Dakota, they care.
Well, you just put on, you know, any one of the talking head shows in May, and that's all they're talking about is the Cowboys. Are they going to do this? Are they going to, you know, some sort of talking point in the A block is talking about the Cowboys. So it's not just your little local hometown team. It's right or wrong, they are America's team.
In all of sports, too.
Yeah.
You know, so I think personally Dan Quinn is the biggest loss here, but I mean, you can definitely mention Tony Pollard, Michael Gallup, Tyron Smith. Here's what's interesting. The way they've attacked the draft, and Dallas has in the last couple of years, well, more than that, it's been a little while now. They've been better at the draft. They've taken, I think, a lot of things away from Jerry and made.
I think that might be one of the biggest things, actually.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think Steven runs it now, and like, it's more of a collaborative effort on the decision. Like, Jerry still pulls the trigger, but it's with everybody in the room. They all talked it out, and this is going to be a draft that this reminds me of what they've been doing, right? Like, I remember they took Travis Frederick, a center from Arkansas, in the first round. And I was like, he's a good center. He's going to be a starter in this league. But why'd they take him in the first round? And that proved to be like it changed the way I looked at the draft and how you draft as a team. Not the way I do draft analysis, but it changed. It was like, who the hell cares? He's going to be a good center in this league, and we need a fucking center. I don't know that he's going to be there in the second round. I know that I need him, and I know that he's going to be good. And lo and behold, Travis Frederick turned out to be a great draft pick. And it didn't matter that he was picked in the first round because it was a hit. He was exactly what they needed. And, you know, I find it interesting. I look at this year, their first three picks, Tyler Guyton to replace Tyron Smith at tackle, Marshawn Nealon to go in there, and I assume, I don't know, Dorrance Armstrong, play defensive end. Cooper Beebe to be an interior offensive lineman. All guys that I think have significant problems. Tyler Guyton, I know some people had in the top 50. I had him outside of it, some in the Senior Bowl, and I thought he had a lot of legwork to work on. In addition to adding leg strength, I thought that he needed some stuff to do there. But this just and Marshawn Nealon is like a high effort player, more of a run stopper, a defensive end.
They're taking more shots at it, right? The hope that one of them will pit.
Yeah, and exactly. But like, am I how wrong am I if Tyler Guyton turns out to be a great tackle? I'm 100% wrong. So like,
yeah, it happens. You know something? All 32 GMs are going to be, I was 100% wrong on something.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a lot too.
But I mean, like, again, like, it's just like, if Tyler Guyton is the tackle that you think fits best, just take him. Don't play games and hope that he's going to be around. Like, Atlanta took Michael Penix at 10. Nobody saw that coming. You don't know shit. Just take the guy you like. So I'm interested to see, but needless to say, when I look at this roster and I look at the way they handled the offseason, I'm not real impressed. I think this really could be the swing at Mike McCarthy at the end of this year.
Hey, you know, guys marry ugly girls. You think they're ugly, and like, why are they with him? It's like, well, they like her. They think she's pretty, and they're happy with their decision. You know, I think that, you know, I've said this all along. If you like your guy, you don't dick around. You take him. And the incremental, you know, well, I could have had him then or something. I don't like to leave things in the hand of fate. I like to control my own destiny. And, you know, again, they also spend 1,000 times more work than even you do, Grump, at looking at players. They have 1,000 times more access to information than you or anybody, you know, in our ilk looks. And they know the situation that they're bringing this quarterback into better than any of us do. Now, we all look at somebody and look at his physical attributes and his numbers and his game film and, you know, how he answers a question at the combine. But they also know what they need, not from a skill set, but how to fit this piece into their jigsaw puzzle. And if they think that's the guy, you know, they'll pay the premium. It's not like a premium. It's not a premium that's going to set a team back 3-4 years. It's something that you just didn't maximize your value. And I think if you hit on something like that, then it's all worth it. It all pans out.
You need your first round pick to be excellent at his position. It's okay. It's not a miss. Like 3 years back, you won't really be like, ah, fuck, what a miss. You know what I mean? Like, you'll never say that because he's going to be a quality part of your team, a foundational piece, you know, like a build around guy. That's what we keep saying, right? Mm-hmm. So like, he's going to be that piece. You're not going to remember that, like, you know, the only time you're going to remember is if like, oh, some crazy quarterback was on the board. Patrick Mahomes was on the board and whatever. You know what I mean? Like, those things are very rare. It's not a miss if you got a foundational piece. End of story.
That's what you have to stop. General managers don't think like fans, like, but what about?
Of course.
They don't exceptions aren't their rules. They don't base their decisions around, well, what if,
well, this,
they think of, they do about based upon what they think. I mean, if they want to take an even if taking a shot with a guy, it's an educated decision they have. It's how they educated themselves. They're not just, I'm going to take a flyer because, you know, I have a gut feeling. You know, they have their own you know, the blackjack table. They know what they want to do. They know what they think their odds are best at.
I think, you know, if this division weren't so goddamn bad, I would think that Dallas might not come in second this year. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this could be a really bad year for Dallas. I do think that this is going to be a bad division, though. And we're going to pivot over to Washington unless you got anything else. But
no, I think, you know, they just announced, I think since the show started, that the schedule is coming out next week.
May 19th. It was right before we started, yeah.
So, you know, it'll be interesting how, you know, this schedule lines up. Dallas, you know, always gets a lot of primetime games, a lot of things that kind of are favorable to them. And, you know, let's see how I feel like the Cowboys are a team that can benefit from a schedule to inflate their record more than most teams do. So, you know, their season could be a disaster. Their season could be better than they actually are because of factors that, you know, are helping them out. So that we'll obviously start our schedule, you know, reviews pretty shortly. But that's always one of the teams I look at when the schedule comes out is how does a team like Dallas, how does a team like, you know, the 49ers, how do they benefit from scheduling? And I think Dallas is one of those teams that could.
I guess so. I just think that, like, we're obviously going to do like a schedule release, mm-hmm. like review, whatever. But like, the only thing to me that like really feels like you get hosed or you get a break is with like the bye scheduling and like Thursday game, primetime games, I guess, and like London international games, well, like shit like that. I think that's where a team really has advantage. Like, it's hard to be like, oh man, you have to play San Francisco. And it's like, you don't know if San Francisco's who their quarterback's going to be that week. Everything is so different.
You know, I always key in on it. I always look at my opponents and say, did they have a bye week the week before? I mean, Florida last year, you know, last year they played four teams in a row that were coming off a bye. And that's an enormous disadvantage you have. So,
yeah, even though you're coming, that's like unfair.
It's completely unfair because you get an extra week to prepare, you get an extra week to rest and get healthy and get those little nicks taken care of. And those are the things I look at in a schedule. And, you know, I'm going to definitely this year, since I brought it up, you know, on the show, like looking at who we're playing and how many teams had byes the week before? How many teams played, you know, are playing the second game in a row at home? They played at home last week. Now they're playing at home against the Giants again, so they don't have to do any traveling for an extended time. Those are little things I think are the big to look at.
That and, like, home openers. Like, having to play a team for their home opener stinks.
Sure.
And, like, you could theoretically play that the first 3 weeks.
Oh, I mean, we're doing this show now. You know we're going to be playing a Sunday night at Philly, right? Just to completely give us that
mm-hmm.
right up the wazoo at the very beginning.
I can already see Chris Collinsworth wheeling into my screen from left to right, right to left or whatever. Anyway, switch over to Washington Commanders.
Yep.
This is interesting. So Dan Quinn in, Ron Rivera out, Eric Bieniemy out. Oh, why isn't he a head coach? He's not good. Jack Del Rio out. Cliff Kingsbury comes in. I think that's interesting. The duo of Dan Quinn and Cliff Kingsbury is interesting to me.
Getting new ownership in
Josh Harrison. This is not the year for Washington. You know, Bobby made a great point on the draft live stream. He's not scared of Washington at all. That was a team that to him was screaming that they wanted Ben Johnson from Detroit, and he turned it down, I think, on the flight there or something like that. It's something weird. He decided to stay in Detroit and try and win with Dan Campbell, and you know, that's awesome. I really didn't want him going to Washington.
Yeah.
That said, I do think that Dan Quinn was a good motivator, a good coach. I'm not happy that he's staying in the division. I think that when he was in Dallas, he was held back by Mark McCarthy, and now he has free reign to put someone as talented as Cliff Kingsbury in control of an offense while he handles a defense is not an ideal situation for me. They go out and they get Jaden Daniels, who was my favorite quarterback in this draft. I really think if he is given time to groom, he has all the ceiling in the world. To top that off, they smartly went out and got Marcus Mariota, who could start the season and play the first 15 games for all we know. You know what I mean? So, like, there is a pathway here.
This is an important first year for them. You said this is not going to be their year.
No, I don't think so.
It's their year to develop a culture and develop the plan going forward.
I think it's really an identity. Yeah. Under Ron Rivera, you got a guy that I think was trying to get a disciplined, smart team out there. Mm-hmm. I think that was the one and only goal. Nothing about that Washington team was exciting.
From an organization,
but they weren't horrible. You know what I mean? Like, they had a great defensive line. You know what I mean? Like,
and it also flew in the face of everything that organization, which has a complete lack of discipline from the owner down to the parking lot attendant.
So, yeah, I think that this is a huge year for them as an organization. It's not their year in terms of what to expect, you know, in terms of results.
And I also am curious, you know, after this year, and even let's say this year is a very disappointing record on the field, again, with a new owner, how's he reacting? Is he like, I am in for this remodel, this rebuild for the longer haul, or is it a reactionary? So we don't know that yet. You know, obviously there's going to be major changes this offseason, and it happened. So, you know, do we have a new owner that's trying to put his stamp on things and feels like, you know, all of a sudden he thinks he knows everything and is going to be making changes if things aren't less than ideal? Or are they going to let this GM, this head coach, these assistants, these players, this quarterback, this roster cook this year, next year, year after? So that's going to be – so the story is not just what's on the field, but, you know, what's the impact of this season going forward?
Yeah, and this is an interesting owner that took this over. This is a guy who bought Sixers tickets or neglected to sell Sixers tickets and took the loss and gave it away to Philadelphia, like, iron workers and stuff so that they could not be sold to Knicks fans. So he took a loss on attendance tickets. He's a guy who just had a general manager, a head coach fired for his hockey team this year. Mm-hmm. So you're right. It's interesting because he's a somewhat unpredictable owner.
Yeah.
Took this team on. And here's where I say this isn't Washington's year, right? Because you have Dan Quinn comes in here and he brings in a bunch of guys that are going to fit what he wants to do right away, right? You get Frankie Louvu, Bobby Wagner, brings over Dante Fowler Jr. He gets Cleveland Farrell. He's going to immediately try and beef up this team, which, remember, they traded away both defensive ends before the end of the year last year.
That's
so,
right.
So that he has some actual work to do there. And, you know, he gets Cliff Kingsbury some stuff here. He gets Marcus Mariota, who, if they're smart at all, he starts the year, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
They re-sign Cornelius Lucas. He's going to have a more expanded role. They get Zach Ertz to play tight end. And then in the draft, they get all these things. Jaden Daniels, Jerjon Newton, who was my highest graded defensive tackle, at least initially. I can't remember off the top of my head if Byron Murphy passed him. But Mike Sainristil, who was one of the best nickel corners in this draft. Ben Sinnott, who was a talented tight end. Like, they got they ignored the offensive line. The offensive line stinks. And, if Jaden Daniels goes out there, people who had concerns about him being light and slight might see their concerns come true.
Sure.
I don't know what they were thinking.
And I have not read a report yet that they've fixed the horrible playing conditions in that stadium, too.
No, I don't think so. I think they're still opting to try and get approval for a new stadium.
Right, but I mean, like, in the interim, like, just, you know, really investing in making that a playable field. You know, we said for years it's one of the worst turfs in football and everything. So
it's the worst stadium in football.
Right, so it's not ideal for a guy like Jaden Daniels to be out there if you're going to have a papier-mâché offensive line, being put in situations where he's going to have to kind of make things happen because they'll probably be losing most games. So, yeah, I mean, the old model of you draft somebody high and you let them sit and learn and you bring in a trusty vet to, you know, placehold and get the, you know, get through a season or half a season until he's ready. It might happen.
Yeah. I mean,
I think it should happen actually.
We'll see. You know what I mean? And so much changes in training camp. It is just like the weirdest like football thing to me that happened. It was just so out of left field that in Seattle they went out and they signed Matt Flynn after his ridiculous game in Green Bay week 17, and dude doesn't even start the season because third round pick Russell Wilson was better than him in camp. You know what I mean? Like,
you gotta respect it though.
No, 100%, and it was absolutely right. Matt Flynn was terrible. He wound up going to Miami where Joe Philbin was, and he sucked, right?
Yeah, that was Scott Mitchell syndrome. He was the original guy who had a good two games when an injury happened, and
on a great
signed a huge
team.
Contract after. Yeah,
yeah. So
it was a bold decision to make, but it's a smart one. It's like you can't die on your hill. Even if that hill costs you a lot of money and could cost you your job, you have to do the right thing. And if Russell Wilson clearly outplayed Matt Flynn and was better, he deserves to play. You know, he's the future. He needs to play. So, problem with things like that.
We can say right now that the smart move is to put Marcus Mariota out there. But, you know, maybe we're entirely wrong. If Jaden Daniels completely outplays him, and I don't mean just at a physical standpoint, but it's like, oh, he's making the correct reads and Marcus is missing them. And, you know, he's hitting the hot route. He's understanding.
That's when you really have to be smart and think of an organization. What are you doing? What is your total plan?
Yeah.
If he's clearly better and it means you might win an extra game or two, is it worth the risk?
I don't think so. I mean, want to get him game time at that point. Like, I would consider being like, I'm going to pull Marcus after week 10 now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You always should be, you know, have a plan, but evaluate that plan on regular intervals, whether that's each game, each, you know, whatever. So just because they would decide to do it, I mean, that's not the way it's going to be going forward. But the smart move is, you know, not little short-term victories. And I think too many of these teams and teams like the Washingtons and the Dallases, they try to do things for quick, you know, quick favor, quick enjoyment, euphoria, as opposed to long term. Exactly.
Yeah. I think that Dan Quinn is a smart guy. I think that he wants to be a head coach no matter what team it is. I think that what happened to him in Atlanta stinks. You know what I mean? His offense really, truly kind of let him down. I mean, I know the defense allowed a team to come back, but
I think Washington's actually a pretty interesting spot to be a head coach right now, because again,
you have a clean slate owner.
We think the division is, you know, they have one really good team, one kind of playoff team, one team that stinks, and then you. And right now, if you are betting in 3 years who's the best quarterback in division, I'd put my money on Jaden Daniels, wouldn't you?
Sure. And I think you can even take that further. I think you can look at the three other organizations out there as an organization that now has a new owner, new GM, new head coach. You three collectively can look around at the other three teams and be like, Howie Roseman's a hothead and Nick Sirianni actually almost got fired after an incredible season. Mike McCarthy might get fired after this season. I was just there in Dallas, you know, Dan
Jerry
Quinn
Jones,
speaking. You know
say
what
it
mean?
All. Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And Joe Shane and Brian Daboll were allegedly on the hot seat. You know what I mean? They're the defensive coordinator. They're the one that you have to worry about 3 years from now. But do you have to worry about what's going on in Philly and Dallas in 3 years? You might not.
Yeah. And also with the Giants, again, we're talking all this, you know, our you know, coach and GM could be on a hot seat 12 months after being the toast of the town.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
So think, you know, and that alone tells you that there's some sort of instability in there.
So you're kind of right. I mean, this is your chance to be like, you know what, everyone, fuck everyone. Let's do what we want to do.
Because, and there's low expectation, you know, right. Nationally and even locally. I mean, they're, you know,
sure.
They're kind
I mean,
of
a, more Ravens fans at this point.
Well, yeah. And every year they keep reducing the capacity of it's no longer FedEx Field, by the way. I think they
did that.
I don't think they have their sponsorship anymore of the stadium.
That's interesting. I wonder when that. I know FedEx threatened to take it away, and that's when Daniel Snyder caved on a lot of stuff. You're probably right. I'm just wondering when.
I remember reading something I thought in the off season, but you know who knows. It is officially Commander's Field at the moment.
There you go. How about
and
that?
And they've reduced the capacity to 65,000, which is when they built it, I want to say it was the largest. I think it was like
probably close to 100.
It was like 90 something. Yeah, when they built it, it was 91,000 capacity, and they kept reducing the upper deck due to like they make a party zone and all this nonsense. And now it is 65,000, which is like the size of
low.
That's like Soldier Field size. It's a shame because, you know, you think of the old Redskins, like that was a fan base that was right up there with, you know, Packer fan is having that college vibe and being so into their team. And
just,
you know, now
a
they're
culture rooted in the bloodlines of the people who live there.
Sure. Sure. Now it's just a,
they don't even have a team name. I mean, they've been stripped of everything, you know, for whatever reason.
Right.
I'm not on a crusade to keep any names. I'm just going to round this out here. I went through some tape on Giants undrafted free agents. It's one of my favorite things to do every year. And I regret to inform you, I'm just not that impressed with them this year. There are some guys I think could make some noise. There are certainly some guys I think are going to be fun to watch on preseason things. And you're going to hear Giants fans being like, oh, I can't believe they couldn't find room for John Giles or whatever. You know, there's going to be guys who can make highlight stuff happen against other guys of shit caliber. There is the possibility that someone makes the 53. I could see it on the defensive side. They got a defensive back I thought was pretty good, Alex Johnson, and a defensive tackle I actually kind of liked, Casey Rogers. When it comes, I think they might have maybe got an interior guy from North Dakota State, and I can't tell if it's just because I really like that level of college football. I really enjoy watching that kind of shit, or if he's, you know, whatever. But Jake Kubis was like an interior guy I could see over time developing into something, just not very exciting. If you want to count Dante Miller, the running back we already talked about, you know, is like, we considered him a free draft pick. You didn't have to spend any draft capital. You could sign him to any contract you want, and you didn't have to wait for the draft to be over. It was too late. So they just got him. He's the guy I'm the most excited for because I think he's going to return kicks, at least in the preseason. We're going to see some of that 4-2 speed that he allegedly has. And I think that that will earn him some preseason running back reps, and who knows what that does for him, you know? Mm-hmm. Other than that, I don't care. Most of these guys, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. If these guys were 6-round picks, you'd be like, eh. So they're guys you're taking flyers on. And, you know, they provide competition during break, during camp, and you see what happens. And that's really all. That's why I don't get too wrapped up and worked up about, you know, all these guys and everything. It's like, let's let competition happen and see if they're, you know, really have a chance to make this roster, or there are bodies to help, you know, practice the guys who are going to be on the team, and then they go on their merry way after.
Yeah, I mean, I usually just like seeing guys who are like, they're almost always, they're either guys I liked in the draft process and I was surprised weren't drafted, or they're guys I've never heard of and I'm excited to learn about them and just see, do we have something here in the future? And for most of these guys, it doesn't feel like any of them will ever be part of the future. Like, I don't even get the slightest whiff for most of these guys.
But, and if they're part of the present, that probably means there's a bigger problem.
Right, and the reason I think Alex Johnson, the defensive back, might actually make the 53 is because the defensive backs aren't that deep right now. And Casey Rogers, a defensive tackle, I don't think this year, but maybe next year. And again, defensive line a little bit weak this year. Like, I don't know. That's all.
But that's also like, if we're kind of keeping him and stashing him on the practice squad or something, that's
it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, I like to see if there's any pathway there for them to be something.
Sure.
Maybe
sure.
not. I think that's going to do it for this one. Anyway, I think this is an episode and we'll be back next week. At the end of this week is rookie minicamp, so we'll probably have something brief on that and any additional news, signings, etc. at that time. Some updates on the Knicks, I'm sure, will come through.
If I'm still alive. I mean, first of all, if Snacks and I don't get thrown out of the garden, or, you know, some Indiana hick beats us up or whatever. But if we survive that and my ticker doesn't, you know, just stop working before next week, I will be here on the show and we'll do our recap of that. But,
yeah, and
these are good times, boys and girls.
So I think the Tuesday morning episode is probably going to be kind of short, as there's not going to be too much to go over. But we will probably, I don't know if you're free Wednesday night.
Should be, unless there's a Knick game.
Right, exactly. So we'll have something for the schedule release later that week. I don't know if it'll be Thursday.
Oh, we'll
morning.
Figure. Yeah, we'll figure that out for sure. I mean,
we'll find a way to make that happen.
Yeah.
So next week there'll be two, but they'll be shorter episodes. So stay tuned for that, of course, on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, and, of course, YouTube. And we will see you guys next time. Until then, go Giants.